Tampering.
We're this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial your one with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with two of my favorite guys from the company, two of my favorite guys on the planet, John Krasinski, Jovan Buha. What's up, gentlemen? How are we?
What's up, Sam?
How's it going?
Jovan, let's go. Let's hear the raspiness. Yeah. Let's hear the raspiness.
I was trying to muster it up there.
Like the smelly cat episode of Friends.
Jovan's playing hard today, not feeling too good. Jovan, of course, Lakers beat extraordinaire and then some. John, Mr. All Things Minnesota. Guys, before the news of the day, we had planned on coming on here to talk shop about all things FIBA World Cup takeaways on your two particular beats. You know, John with Anthony Edwards, Jovan with Austin Reeves, and we are still certainly going to do that. But sometimes the headlines kind of write themselves. And today, breaking news from our Shams Charania and Joe Varden, who, by the way, did a fantastic job covering the entire World Cup tournament in the Philippines and beyond. It did not take long for the Avengers, as everybody is calling them, to step forward and decide to announce through media channels that the big boys are coming for the Olympics. You know, the Team USA, you know, listen, it is what it is. They finished fourth in the World Cup, you know, tough enough that they lose to Germany and don't get to the championship game, the gold medal game, but then they fall to Canada. And a matter of hours later, Shams and Joe are reporting that LeBron James, when the Olympics roll around, he'll be 39 years old, is leading a group that has had extensive conversations already about playing in the Paris Olympics next summer. That group includes Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Jason Tatum, Draymond Green. That is the kind of LeBron team, if you will, separately and also, you know, as elite. Phoenix's Devin Booker, Portland's Damian Lillard, the Kings' De'Aaron Fox, and Dallas's Kyrie Irving. Essentially, all of those guys are either ready to commit now or have serious interest a long ways from Paris, guys, but you know, if that doesn't, I'm sure, make the Team USA group from FIBA just feel warm and fuzzy when they got up this morning, I'm sure, you know, that had to be a little tough. How did that news hit you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that this was honestly always going to be the case, just given, you know, Paris, you know, destination city. Olympics obviously are always bigger deal for the U.S. Than the World Championships or the World Cup, things like that. But certainly coming out, it's easier for them to act the hero coming off of a little bit of a disappointing finish for the Americans and not meddling. And so this clears the runway for, hey, here we come to save the day again and let the narrative go. And what I like most about it, though, is that it really does show where the game is at a global level. Like, if the Americans don't bring their A squad, you're not going to win. Not only are you not going to win, you might not even medal. And so I think that it shows the strength of the game worldwide. We're seeing it in the NBA with all the international players who are kind of leading the way now. But you have to mean business if you're Team USA, if you want to compete nowadays. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I think John hit on it for me most, where it's Paris. It's, you know, the guys want to be there. Like, it's just one of those cities that, like in LA, like in New York, you frequently see players, you know, at Paris Fashion Week and you know, different events there over the summer. But I also think there's a level of desperation with USA basketball right now that we haven't really felt since 2008, right? Because if you look at the last couple of Olympic teams, they've been good. They've been really good, but it's kind of been B plus, maybe A-minus rosters. Like the last real heavy hitting roster was 2012. And, you know, since then, LeBron hasn't played. Steph obviously hasn't played. No Kawhi, no Anthony Davis. So, you know, KD's been kind of the one megastar that's been there throughout. But I think just looking back at some of these recent Olympic teams, like, you know, it hasn't been the biggest stars or the biggest American stars, rather, in the game. And I think if you look at that potential roster for next season or next summer, like I think that's a group we haven't seen since, again, you know, 2008 or 2012. So to me, it shows like they are playing for something now, that there are the stakes of, if we don't send the best possible team, not only is there a chance we lose, we're probably going to lose. You know, based on recent history, if they don't have the best, you know, roster possible, they're probably going to lose. So I think, you know, Team USA has kind of been humbled in a way that I don't think they had been really in almost a decade.
No, I agree with all that. And to give quick context for folks who kind of just loosely follow the international stuff, everybody knows that Team USA is expected to win gold, but that has obviously not been the case on the FIBA side every time out. On the Olympic side, you're talking four straight golds in the Olympics. The bronze in 2004 in Athens, where they famously, you know, that sparked the Redeem team, in Beijing 4 years later. But it's seven out of the last eight golds for Team USA, a bronze in 88, you know, way back when. FIBA, different story. They get gold in 2010, 2014, and last two tournaments have gone seventh and fourth. The one thing that the program, you know, that Jerry Colangelo obviously was the architect of for so long here, that has not been able to pull off, is convincing American players to have the years-long type of commitment to compete in FIBA World Cup and then transition to the Olympics. They are clearly now having to accept this kind of two-team approach. And you know, I mean, I think it makes for intrigue next summer when all of these future Hall of Famers might get together. Although, Jovan, as a quick aside, this made me laugh. You mentioned the Paris kind of factor and players being excited about playing in Paris. Shout out, I'm pretty sure this was Joe's paragraph from his piece today. Joe writes, let me find it here. It says, finally, the first part of the Olympic basketball tournament is not in Paris. It's public knowledge, but few NBA stars may realize that the preliminary games will be played in, pronunciation might be off, Lille, France, a 1 hour, 40-minute train ride north from Paris. Medal rounds are in Paris, but his general point, I thought, landed, that the idea that it's like, man, we get to go hoop and, you know, kind of reestablish global domination after this abomination and then go live it up in Paris. Like, no, you're going to be on a train, you know, a lot, or just staying out there for the opening rounds. But it's intriguing. The part that also hit me when this news landed, and I think, you know, John, you certainly can relate in terms of our careers and our timelines are kind of similar. I'm not going to lie, like, I kind of got fired up when I saw the names, because you're talking about players that, you know, that when I started covering the league is when these guys got rolling. You know what I mean? So the idea from kind of the part of me that can relate to the, you know, the OGs and the old head part of this, going out in style, going out to win the gold like they clearly want to, I think that could be an absolute blast if they end up doing it.
Yeah, I think that's one other thing I wanted to hit on, is that there is the time element of this. I mean, LeBron, like you said, is going to be 39. Steph is getting a little older. Like, a lot of the American superstars are getting up there in age. They're still great players. They're still very effective on the court. But this is different. This is a different point at their careers. And so they look at, I think you look at it as, how many more Olympics are LeBron, is LeBron going to be able to play in? Is Steph going to be able to play in? Right now, like, the whole American program is kind of in this period of transition. You know, you look at the NBA and the, you know, it's Jokic, it's Giannis, it's Embiid, it's a lot, it's Luka kind of at the top of the food chain. And we're kind of waiting to see, who is that next American star that's going to come up and be ready to take over when LeBron eventually retires in 10 years and when Steph does, and all of these guys. And so we saw maybe some of those signs in the Philippines you know, with Edwards and a few others. But this is a timely factor too, of like, I think that some of these stars are looking and saying, I wonder how many of these I have left in me. I better take advantage of it while I'm able to.
I mean, John, if you're going to throw the oop, then I got to finish it. You know what I mean? You kind of alluded to Mr. Edwards, and that is one of your many areas of expertise. And I want to unpack, you know, what he was able to do at FIBA World Cup, even with the unfortunate finish for them. Ant was the best player on the team, I think, by a long shot. Man, glimpses of his two-way play. Now, defense was a major problem for that team. It was historically bad on that end of the floor. But in terms of moments, you know, and again, you've seen it up close a lot more than I have. You got reminded and kind of shown that Anthony Edwards has the potential to be a guy who is an absolute, you know, just kind of hell on wheels on both ends of the floor. He ends up leading Team USA in scoring, you know, was dominant at times. Some discussion within their journey, and this stuff really interested me. You know, Steve Kerr initially talks about maybe bringing Ant off the bench. That doesn't happen. You know, that was, I think, the wise move. He's going to start, and then he ends up, you know, dominating quite a bit. Then you have internal, it seemed, discussions about just the balance between scoring and passing and finding a way for him to you know, kind of rise the guys around him while doing his thing himself. These themes, and this is extremely hyperbolic, I admit, I'm watching these themes, John, and then I'll be honest, I'm also looking at Ant, who has like almost a physical resemblance to a guy by the name of Michael Jordan. And I'm fascinated by the part of his journey that he is in, because, you know, people a lot of times do forget that before Michael was the guy, again, disclaimer, hyperbolic, you don't talk about Michael with anybody, but for the sake of this discussion, before Michael was winning six titles, you know, going perfect in the finals, he was the guy who was kind of butting his head up against the Pistons and other squads in the playoffs, and he was the score first, doesn't pass enough, selfish, you know, allegedly selfish, young rising star. Some of those themes, I think, are there a little bit with Ant. Just in general, how did his journey hit you, and what do you think it means for him going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that from a Timberwolves perspective, I don't know that they could have been any more encouraged than they were by what they saw, because one thing about, you know, we've had this discussion the last week or so about maybe the national attention that does or doesn't come the Timberwolves way and things like that. And I do think that there is an element of Anthony Edwards, the player, the teammate, all of those things that you just have to be around to really understand and appreciate and soak up. And it's not until he gets in the locker room and it's not until he gets on the court with you that you really understand, you know, just the charisma, the leadership, the physical dominance that he's capable of displaying. And so that's why I do think that right away at the start of camp, you know, Steve Kerr, you know, did think about, hey, we're going to bring you off the bench and be like the spark plug. And it didn't take very long at all for him to realize, oh no, this is a different dude. And we saw really that kind of emerged throughout the tournament, is that he was the one guy who seemed to be most capable of taking the challenge on and bringing the fight to the other team, whether it was the comeback in Germany, you know, whether it was, you know, the loss and in 35 points and really just being one of the guys who could have some success. And I just think that it was so clear that he was the guy. And part of the offshoot conversation of sharing the ball and things like that, I think, is just a 22-year-old learning how to play the game and empower teammates and do all of that. And I don't think he's selfish. I don't think there's anything like that. But I do think that the playmaking aspect of things, there's more nuance and complexity to it. And sometimes that takes a little time for you to be able to pick your spots. And when is it time to take over and get your own shot? When is it time to get other people going? He showed some steps in that direction, but I think he still has some things to learn there. But overall, you know, to see the way that he took charge of that team and really separated himself from the rest of them, I think it's really good signs for the Timberwolves going into next season.
Jovan, I want to get your thoughts here too, but quickly I will say, to your point, John, if you're talking about like preferred profile of an elite athlete, I will every day of the week go with the guy who, like, it is a very good problem to have when you can dominate all the time by yourself and you have to learn how to pull back. You have to learn how to share the ball differently, you know, because the vast majority of guys on the floor don't have that ability to, you know, to go out and dominate. And there were, again, times in this tournament where it popped for me. And I mean, he had a great year last year, but as you know, in the context of that Timberwolves roster and that landscape and the crunchiness with the Rudy Gobert arrival, you know, in the Karl Anthony Towns history and Chris Finch trying to find his way, you know, Ant wasn't always, you know, having that wide open lane, so to speak, to do his thing. Jovan, I mean, you've covered a lot of the best guys in the game and you've seen alpha males, so to speak, you know, find themselves and then, you know, eventually lead their teams. How do you see the Ant situation?
Yeah, well, excuse me. I think John made a good point of this kind of being a slow burn for Ant. I was there in Las Vegas for the Team USA minicamp, and to me, it seemed like Ant was clearly the best player on the team. But in talking to people, remember Joe had we did the poll where we talked to each player on the roster and asked them who's been the best player in camp, who's the best player on the team right now. And Jaren Jackson Jr. was overwhelmingly the favorite there, and he obviously had some pretty good moments, but I think by the end of the tournament,
didn't turn out so well. Yeah,
didn't age great. But I think, you know, to John's point, like Ant, I think it took him a little bit to adjust. I remember that first scrimmage, he was going ISO heavy a lot, and it was very much my turn, your turn type basketball. With that starting group, and that was something that I feel like that group never, you know, fully figured out. It got better throughout the tournament, but I thought Ant was kind of the face of that at first. But as things got harder, as this group gelled, as they kind of figured out the you know, different ways to play, to me, Ant obviously rose to the top, and it was clear he was the alpha of this team. He was the best player on the team. And, you know, I think he was the go-to guy ultimately. So I think we see this time and time again. I remember Kevin Durant in 2010, and you could go on throughout, you know, recent Team USA history of young guys stepping into another level of stardom over the summer. And to me, Ant is the guy from this team that, going into next year, can he be a top 10 guy? Can he be a top 15 guy? Like, I think that's on the table. And with the way that he played, I think it's certainly possible.
Jovan, you mentioned the Jaren Jackson thing. And so I'll quickly highlight, it's like this, you know, this FIBA experience, and you just hit on Durant. That's the kind of the penultimate example of a guy who made the most of it, kept his career kind of ascending from there. And that is something that often comes out of this experience, but it doesn't always go that way. You do see times when it doesn't mean these particular players are going to have bad NBA seasons, but man, Jaren Jackson Jr. goes from being the guy his teammates are voting as best in camp to, you know, getting dominated on the glass and really not being impactful in the way that he is for the Grizzlies on most nights. That was strange. You know, Cam Johnson struggles, Brandon Ingram struggles. There are guys where, as I watch the tournament, man, from a human standpoint, you find yourself honestly feeling bad for them because, first of all, once they lose out on the gold, we all know the expectations back home. So I don't care what they say. Like, they got on that plane, they felt like they failed, and they did in terms of the goal. Then on top of that, like, you know, imagine being one of those players who decides to give up your summer and to go do this thing and thinks that it's going to help propel you for the forthcoming NBA season, and then to just not have it pan out. And there was a handful of guys like that. I do, though, want to keep looking at things through the NBA lens. So, John, I'm going to throw it back to you. Give me more perspective and your thoughts on, you know, where this kind of takes the T-Wolves and what you see out of them this season. They are on, I think, most people's short list of fascinating teams. Like, you've got teams that are star-studded. We're going to watch, okay, in Phoenix, what's going to happen with Bradley Beal coming in, that whole group. Minnesota, in terms of a fascinating, nuanced, you know, like used the word crunchy earlier, a lot of folks are watching. Can they make this thing, you know, hum a little bit better in the second year with Rudy? How do you see it now?
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, obviously the most encouraging thing is what you saw from Edwards and like seemed poised to take that next step. And I think that the thing that makes them most confident about where they're going with him in the middle of things is that he's had really good playoff performances in his first two series. Against Memphis, he was great. Against Denver, he was really, really good. And so he has shown an ability when the lights are brightest to deliver. and to be the kind of player that other teams just don't have an answer for. And that's the, like you said earlier, Sam, that's the hardest thing to, I think, acquire in the league. And so if you have that guy, that's a big step. The other good thing for them is that Karl Anthony Towns played really well for the Dominican Republic. He shot the ball well, looked like he was in great shape.
Man of the people, Karl Anthony Towns. Yeah, man. Celebrating with the regular folks.
Exactly. So he was having a lot of fun, and he's kind of a vibes player. So when he's having fun, I think is when he's his most effective on the court as well. And so obviously him missing 52 games last year with his injuries led to a lot of the clunkiness, a lot of the disjointedness that you did see with Rudy, with the trade for Mike Conley. It just like never gave this team any foundation to build upon, really. And so I think that both Edwards and Towns are going to be in great shape coming into camp, healthy, coming off of really good international play. And so that should allow them to be just on firmer footing and have a better idea of how to play. Now, on the flip side of it, we can say, you know, that they should be encouraged about Ant and Kat, but Rudy didn't play that well for France in the international in FIBA, and France was a huge disappointment. And so I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on Rudy Gobert going into this. And is he just was last year and was France just kind of some anomalous struggles, or was this the start of a decline? And at 30, 31 years old. And that's, I think that's going to be the biggest answer or question mark for them. And can they get Rudy back to at least being, you know, really dominant defensively and helpful offensively, or are they really stuck trying to work around what they have with Rudy here? That's a question mark going into camp.
Last thought on that front, then we're going to take a quick break here, but what can you share about how you feel, where you feel like the front office and ownership's, you know, perspective and kind of strategy is on that front right now? Meaning, you know, you wrote recently about all the discussion about Anthony Edwards and you know, Patrick Beverley saying that he needs to go somewhere else. And you kind of pointed out, hey, folks, he got a 5-year contract that hasn't even started yet. So he's locked in for a long time. Huge money to Kat and to Rudy. When it comes to Tim Conley, you know, kind of more than anybody else, you know, head of that front office and the way he sees things, what sort of approach do you think they're taking to this season in terms of how patient they will be? You know, is it months? Is it still years with this group? How do you see that part?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big season coming up for this core and what they're going to do with it going forward. Ant got his extension. Jaden McDaniels is due to get a hefty extension himself. Rudy's making max money. Towns is making max money. And so they want to give this every opportunity to work. They want to give this roster construction the ability to play together. And they really want to see it. They don't feel like they really got a good chance last season to do it. So they're going into this wanting the best and wanting to see it play out. But if it doesn't, if they stumble, if they are not making progress, if they're still in the play-in conversation, if they're certainly if they're one and done in a playoffs or something like that again, and then you look at the financial penalties that are going to come with all of this money committed to all of these guys, something would have to change. And so I do think this is sort of a prove it season for this team. And if it's not going well in the first several months of the season, could they look to, you know, mix things up at the trade deadline? Maybe. I think more likely is they will look next summer and see where, let the dust settle and see where they're at before they make a drastic trade of any kind. But this is the big season for, you know, will Rudy be here for a long time? Will Kat be here for a long time? What's going to happen with Jaden McDaniels? Like, all of these things are going to play out in one way or another this season coming up.
Good stuff. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Jovan, we've let you conserve all your energy. So on the other side, we're talking Lakers. We're talking Austin Reeves. It's always so exciting for me when our buddy Fred Katz is not on the show. I don't get in trouble for talking Lakers. We got a Lakers swear jar. I'm going all in, leaning in to the Lakers discussion on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, gentlemen, let's do it. Not going to lie, always probably my favorite team to talk about just because there's always something with, you know, Lakerland. Jovan, you and I have been in that ecosystem for years together now, and they are coming up on an incredibly interesting year. You know, a very surprising run to the West Finals. You know, as Darvin Ham liked to point out so many times last season, you know, they had an infinitesimal chance of getting there after that awful start to the regular season. And so the macro question going forward here certainly is, you know, was the West Finals some sort of peak, or was it kind of a peek into their future? And that's what I think makes them so interesting. And within that, you've got young Austin Reeves, this kind of out of nowhere rising, we want to call him a rising star, rising, you know, very strong role player, whatever label you want to put on him. Austin was part of this Team USA group that, again, fell short, but had a lot of good moments himself. We talked about Ant and the two-way component of this game. And as you guys know, because the poor guy just got, you know, memed like crazy all throughout the tournament, Austin's defense was something that went viral in the wrong kinds of ways. He got picked on a lot in switches. And it was this really interesting, you know, just the pros and cons were right there, you know, to see on both ends of the floor. Because, you know, again, the defensive stuff, I think, did overshadow. I mean, he was offensively, you know, fantastic for a lot of that tournament. And I'm sure Rob Pelinka and that Lakers group loved what they saw there. But I don't know why I'm talking so much about your team and the guy you cover. What do you think? What did you see? You know, what was the Austin Reeves experience?
Yeah, I think overall it was a very positive experience for Austin Reeves. Remember, this was a guy that when he made the roster, there were a lot of people saying he shouldn't have even been on the team. And they were referencing, you know, why isn't Trae Young on the team? Why isn't De'Aaron Fox on the team? What, you know, this guy's just on the team because he's a white Lakers role player. And, you know, there's a lot of Alex Caruso buzz, and then now it's been Austin Reeves. But, you know, for him to go from realistically being one of the last players, I think, to make the team, when you just look at the pedigree of some of the guys on the roster, to being, you know, in the top seven of the rotation, closing a lot of games, and I have the numbers here. He was second on the team in scoring behind Ant, 14 points a game, 56, 50, and 94 shooting splits across field goal percentage, free throw, 3-point percentage, and free throw percentage, and fifth in the team in assists. So from an offensive perspective, I think Austin Reeves showed that that run he went on after the trade deadline and the Lakers remade their roster was legit. From that point, he averaged about 17 points and 5 assists, was the Lakers' clear number 3 option. And I think that's going to be his role next season and moving forward. And I did a profile on him earlier in the summer, and we talked about Darvin Ham's comments of, you know, about him potentially being an all-star in the next couple of years. And that's one of Austin's goals. And I really think it's possible when you factor in LeBron and AD are going to miss 15 to 25 games every season. That's just what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. So if you think about that and Austin Reeves' potential role when those guys are out, there's no reason to me that he can't average 18 to 20 points, 4 to 5 rebounds, 5 to 6 assists, and provide plus defense as a guard. I think with him, it's he defends, like, he defended Steph pretty well in the playoffs. You know, I think that's more of his natural position. Is he's a 6'5" shooting guard who he can put the clamps on point guards and shooting guards. You ask him to switch onto a 6'10" big man, especially with the FIBA style of play where you can elbow guys, you can shoulder check guys, the refs are going to let you play. Yes, Austin Reeves is going to lose those battles. So on the one hand, I think it showed like he does need to continue to get stronger, and the Lakers need to find ways to, like, we saw some of that in the Denver series as well, where if he switched on to Aaron Gordon, Aaron Gordon's going to bulldoze him, get to the rim, you know, draw a foul, score, whatever. But that's just kind of the limitation of being a 6'5", you know, not athletic guard in the league. Like there is a limitation there. But for me, Austin showed what he showed offensively to me trumps anything that he didn't show defensively, where he's, again, we're talking about some of these guys on the, you know, Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges. Like these are guys averaging 20 plus points a game, leading playoff contending teams. And Austin Reeves was the second leading scorer among the group. So to
for sure.
You can nitpick.
B.I. being able to get on the floor, a player of that caliber. You know what I mean? I mean, that part, I think, was lost in the conversation, that he competed and performed his way near the top.
And I think if the coaching staff viewed him as that level of a defensive liability, he wouldn't have been closing games. Like at some point, it would have been like the trade-off isn't enough. And we've seen that. Like for the Lakers, it happened with D'Angelo Russell, where Denver ruthlessly picked on D'Angelo Russell. Now he wasn't providing much offensively, so that kind of complicated things, I think, as well. But we've seen it in playoffs and high stakes games. If you can't defend, you usually get pulled off the floor. And I think Austin was so valuable offensively that definitely, to me, offset some of those defensive concerns. Now they are legit, and I think the Lakers have to bake that into their defensive game plan of like, we can't have this guy necessarily switch onto a big man the way that maybe an Ant could. You know, Ant's around the same size, but obviously stronger, more athletic. Like, so there are limitations there, but I think much was made, you know, of that almost as like a backlash to all the Austin positivity. Whereas again, this guy was second on the team in points, fifth in assists, and he was doing all that coming off the bench as one of the last guys to make the roster. Like to me, I think we're overcomplicating things.
John, before I throw it to you, I'll say a couple of quick things. For one, FIBA takeaways are hard, meaning, you know, we've tried to do that today, figure out what is substantive and what really tells you something versus what doesn't. All you got to look at is the fact that, you know, congrats to Germany for winning the whole thing. The idea of Dennis Schroeder, you know, who was, you know, trying to get a job late in free agency, ends up with Toronto, a good, very good player, but Dennis Schroeder being the MVP tells you, you know, kind of how different FIBA is. That's not disparaging FIBA. It is a team game in every sense of the word. You know, but you got Dylan Brooks dropping 39 points, you know, in the bronze medal game. Dylan just, I mean, he balled out all the way through the tourney. But takeaways are hard. The only thing I'll push back on Jovan on the Austin front in terms of the defensive liabilities in the tournament, I mean, the inherent nature of losing like Team USA did means you're going to bring scrutiny. So, you know, was the trade-off worth it in terms of what Steve Kerr and his staff decided to do? Ultimately, I mean, considering defensive struggles were the number one problem they faced, considering in the bronze medal game, guys like Dylan Brooks were getting off the way they were, it's certainly not Austin's fault. I mean, you watch those games, there was just zero resistance on the perimeter. It was unbelievable. In fact, in the bronze medal game, the commentators highlighted the fact that, you know, when Canada played Serbia 2 days before, they just were not getting anything close to the looks that they got in that bronze medal game. So, you know, I mean that, but again, Austin on the whole, I think had a good experience. It's going to be a huge part of what the Lakers do this year. John, where are you at on the Austin Reeves debate? Because we got this, not to put our people out there, we got this wildly entertaining athletic NBA show group text. Yep. Where people get loose, and you know, there's a handful of folks in there that, you know, probably think that I could beat Austin Reeves in one-on-one the way they talk about him. Where do you land in this debate?
Well, I'll say, like, covering a Minnesota team that's not in the spotlight all the time, there can be certainly some perception sometimes of a glow up that happens when you put on purple and gold, and sometimes, hey, oh, they get talked about this or that because they're Lakers and actually they're not as good as what they're made out to be. I actually, when I look at Austin Reeves, am on the other side of it. I think he's a high level role player. I think what stands out to me most when I watch him play is I think his teammates love playing with him. I think he's one of those guys that goes out and fits in to a scheme and a system and earns respect very quickly. And, you know, is he a number one or number two guy? No. Will he ever be an all-star? I don't know about that. Maybe he will, but he's the kind of player that every really good team needs. He can shoot it. He can put the ball on the floor a little bit. He passes it. He will get after you defensively in the right matchups. And do things for you. And I think that contract that the Lakers got him on is fantastic. Like, I think that's going to be a great value for them. I was surprised that another team with space didn't make it at least a little harder on the Lakers to come up with something that they had to match that would have been at least a little bit of a pinch for them financially. So I'm a fan of Austin Reeves in that regard. You know, one of the things that I saw when, you know, he was on the floor in crunch time and he could make shots and kind of create his own a little bit. And that's a valuable. I think one of the other reasons is they didn't have Team USA disappointingly didn't have anyone else to come out and defend like that. I thought Bridges was going to be better defensively. Ant is really good on the ball, but sometimes loses his guy off of the ball on the perimeter. And so, you know, and Jalen Brunson just isn't
I know we're guilty, you know, media inherently again is like Monday morning quarterback and literally it's Monday morning. We're doing that. But John, if you're looking at it again and saying, all right, some of Austin's minutes defensively, maybe they should have gone to this guy or that guy. I mean, Josh Hart comes to mind, you know, but
yeah, you know, but he was such a liability to offensively shot making wise that. I don't know that he's the guy. Like, I mean, that's why I don't know that they had another option to put out there. Ingram just, this was not the tournament for him. This was not the team for him. He did not look ready for it. And didn't look like a good fit that way. Cam Johnson was meh. You know, they're just
23%. And I know it's low sample size, but
I wonder if you could have played more Walker Kessler and just at least given it a look of like what does a Kessler Paolo front court look like? What does a Kessler Jaren Jackson Jr. front court look like? Because my thing was ultimately like, I don't want to scapegoat anybody because I think in a situation like this that there's plenty of blame to go around. But I do feel like Jaren Jackson Jr. and the foul trouble. This was stuff we saw with terrible. Memphis. This was kind of like the worst version of Jaren Jackson Jr., which was, you know, gets into foul trouble, doesn't rebound well, and ultimately can kind of be played off the floor or played into, kind of an ineffective style where now he's in foul trouble and he can't be as aggressive as he normally is. And I think then when you have him as your last line of defense and then you're playing basically four guards or like a wing and three guards, yeah, you're not going to be good defensively. You're not going to be good on the glass. Like, that was it. Like, ultimately, to me, it was a size thing.
They got crushed. The problem, for sure.
They got crushed on the glass. Second chance points in the paint. Like, they were just too small. And again, if you're asking, you know, we're talking about Austin, so I'm going to use him as an example. But, like, if you're asking Austin Reeves to guard 6'10" bigs in a FIBA tournament, like, yeah, you're going to probably lose. But if he's more properly slotted as an actual shooting guard defending guards and you either have a counter, you either don't switch as much or you just have more collective size where like if you do switch now you have bigger guys helping or bigger guys on the weak side, like that to me is a more formidable strategy. So again, we can sit here and as you said, you know, Monday morning quarterback, and hindsight's always 20/20 with these types of things, but I do think it was clear Team USA was consistently getting slaughtered in the paint and on the glass, and playing one big for a lot of the time, I don't think helped matters.
It's Monday morning point guard, I guess. I got that wrong. Jovan, let's take it back to the Lakers. Who are they this year? You know what I mean? Like, again, I hit on it earlier. Like, was the West Finals, you know, the best version of them? Now, Rob Pelinka, again, very, very good summer. You know, he re-ups with Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, gets Austin at a good number, and John alluded to this earlier. If you have any context, you feel like sharing on, you know, what you learned about Austin's market this summer and how they did land on. And I forget the numbers. I'm rusty on Austin's contract.
454.
Yeah, I mean that's wildly.
He's got a player option year four.
Extremely team friendly.
Exercise, yeah.
Yeah,
or you know, given, he'll opt out, and yeah.
You know, given the economy that the league is looking at this summer. That was a fantastic deal for the Lakers. So I guess start there. Why didn't anybody else around the league end up applying the kind of pressure that was going to cost the Lakers?
Yeah. So the two teams that were interested in Austin or had the most interest in Austin were San Antonio and Houston. And with Houston, from my understanding, had the Fred VanVleet situation not happened, Austin was next on their list or in that next tier for them of guys they were going to try and sign. Obviously, Fred VanVleet gets that monster deal and that, you know, he ends up not being a need for them. And then San Antonio was the team that, Reeves and his camp were going back and forth with and ultimately instilled a deadline with in terms of, hey, like we have this offer from the Lakers. It's a great offer. Of course, we'd like more money and that would be something nice. But San Antonio was being very diligent and patient in terms of making a formal offer. And they were considering, potentially some type, 3-year, $60 million deal where that would still poison pill the Lakers in the third year or something along the lines of the 4-year max, which would have been around 4 years, $100 million. But ultimately, they chose not to do it, at least by the deadline. They wanted to see how the free agent market played out. Reeves and his camp didn't want to just be out there in the game of musical chairs. And then the Lakers, once San Antonio's gone, the Lakers have no incentive really other than just goodwill and keeping the partnership good to offer him that max. So I think for them, they just chose the guaranteed money and he loves LA. He's made it clear he feels at home. They've got a great relationship with Jeannie Buss. They've got a great relationship with the front office. He loves LeBron.
Taylor Swift is out there sometimes.
Taylor Swift is sometimes out. It's much more realistic than a random Arkansas bar. I will say that, him running into Taylor Swift there. So as far as where the Lakers are, to me, they're third in the West in my pecking order. I think Denver, you got to give them their respect. I do think the depth is a bit of an issue. They are betting on Christian Brown and Peyton Watson both taking jumps next season. And I think that starting lineup to me is the best lineup in basketball. But beyond that, I don't really, I didn't love the Reggie Jackson signing. I think there's still a hole at backup center. Like if any one of those five guys suffers an injury, I think they're more susceptible to lose games or be at a disadvantage than other contenders. And then I love Phoenix. I think Phoenix is a potential sleeping juggernaut. I think they're one of the few teams that could potentially win 60 games next season. And
do juggernauts sleep? I've never pondered this question before. Sorry.
Well, I think people sleeping just giant, are underrating yeah. how, like, I think, like, if you told me, let's flash forward 9 months from now and Phoenix wins 60 games and like just dominates in the playoffs and goes like, 16-5. Like I wouldn't be shocked by that. And I think a lot of people would. I just think with that collection of talent and shooting guys who could play on and off the ball, I love their vet minimum signings. I think they crushed it, in bargain hunting. So to me, Phoenix is like the defense and the health are obviously two major things. And that could go a bunch of ways, but
how do you see the upside point guard question?
I think they're fine. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant to me running an offense. It's like, I don't know. I think like it's similar to the Clippers where we've seen the Clippers with PG and Kawhi running the offense. I mean, when they're healthy, again, health is a big thing with this team, but like when the Clippers are healthy, they made a conference finals run. Like they've looked like they can win a championship. They just can't stay healthy. And that's my thing with Phoenix. If they can stay healthy, I think they're going to figure it out. Then for me, John, the Lakers are right there at number three, where I think it's weird because they made the conference finals and I think they got better, but I still like Phoenix and Denver more. But to me, it's always dependent on match. Like maybe Phoenix and Denver get slotted on the same side of the West bracket and they have to play each other in the second round. And that allows the Lakers to then make a conference finals. Then you got to only beat one of those two. But I do think for as much as the Lakers got better, my one criticism I'll say, I don't love the additions of Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes. I don't think it helps the interior. I think it helps the interior offensively. Jackson Hayes, rim runner, athletic, lob threat. Christian Wood, most talented offensive big that has played with Anthony Davis, in my opinion, just with his you know, ability to score in the post, ability to score in ISOs, three-point shooting, like all that stuff's great. But defensively, that is a considerable step down from the JaVale McGee-Dwight Howard pairing that the Lakers keep referencing. Like, Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes are not in the same ballpark as those two guys defensively. And the notion that, like, they're going to step in and recreate that 2019-20 magic, to me, just doesn't make any sense. It's not realistic. And if you're going to put one of those two guys on Jokic in a playoff series, he's going to feast. Like, if you thought it was bad what he did to Anthony Serbian Davis, like, it's going to be bad. So the Lakers still have to figure that out, to me, where they need, at some point in the regular season, whether it's a signing or a trade, they need a better defensive big other than AD that they can trust to at least defend. Like, you're not going to stop Jokic, but can you not foul out in like 8 minutes against him? Like, they still need that guy to meet. So that's my one criticism. But otherwise, I think they're better, much better shooting, better depth. I like some of the role players, like Gabe Vincent, Torian Prince. I think this is a better group, but I still think the interior defense and the rebounding are two concerns for me that they have not addressed yet.
John, I didn't know that Jovan was going to come with receipts. He got his West rankings here.
Yeah.
Telling us
we're not ready for that yet.
You better be. We're going to finish with you. I'm going to throw it back to you because I am guilty because I'm West Coast based, you know, of being West Coast centric with some of my coverage.
Oh, I know. I know.
But like, the West is wild. I know it's a cliche, but yet again, you look at the West, I got the standings in front of me from last year, and you know, Jovan laid out a very logical argument. I can't really argue with the reasoning behind some of your choices, Jovan, but in terms of just looking at the context here, you've got it going Denver, Phoenix, Lakers. That means you see the Lakers as better than a Memphis team that, even though they're going to be without Ja Morant for 25 games, you know, re-upped with Desmond Bane, added Marcus Smart. I'm actually pretty high on the Grizzlies going into next year, although apparently, you know, Dylan Brooks should have been on that team because that guy's going to be in the MVP discussion the way he looked with Team Canada. But Clippers loaded if they're healthy. Warriors are the Warriors, are leaning into making another run. OKC with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander showing out the way he did and looking like a superstar. The Pelicans, if they're healthy. The Mavs, Kyrie Luka. You go all the way down the list. And the list, I'm going to say it stops right there. That's the end of the list. Your T-Wolves are somewhere in there. If you're taking the dart and throwing it at the board, where do you see them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, unfortunately, like, it's not good for podcasting, but there's a lot of variance for them. I think if things come together, if they figure out some spacing offensively and you get a Rudy that is a little bit closer to what he was in Utah, then I think they can be a 5 or a 4 seed in the regular season. What they do in the playoffs, who knows? Like, I think that's the real question for them. But I could see a scenario where they do get up that high in the regular season because they have a lot of talent. I mean, you have Jaden McDaniels, you have Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander Walker looked good in FIBA. Yeah. Like, they have a lot of talent from like 1 through 9. That is good, but does it all fit together? And if it doesn't, if Rudy continues to struggle, if they can't figure out the too big thing, then I could see him down around 9-10. Like, I think the variance is there for them. Their hope, obviously, is if Edwards takes that next step into top 10-15 guy, maybe he just raises the floor enough almost on his own to do that. But they are going to go into this season, I think, with as big of a gap between where their ceiling is and where their floor is as almost anybody in the West.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's great for podcast promotion. We're going to have a tweet. Our team is going to jump on it. John Krasinski, T-Wolves have variants. That's going to pop.
Click, click, click.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, you know, and that's where it's interesting with all these groups. I am, admittedly, we joked off air before coming on that we're all kind of coming out of our holes again. The offseason has been deep for a while, but the season is upon us. It'll be a lot of fun. Guys, I appreciate you jumping on here in the end of the dog days of summer. Great seeing your faces. Thank you, as always, to the loyal listeners, and we will talk to you soon.